Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
All right, Jocelyn, today we are very excited. We have Alexandra Robbins joining us. We have a notable author. I feel like this means our podcast has arrived. I'm just going to say that really out there.
I am pretty excited about it.
I think we have done something powerful here. But Alexandra did something really meaningful. She did this kind of expose on teaching, which, as you read her words in the book, The Teachers, it's like the lived experience, right? It's the world as we know it, but kind of consumable for everybody else.
Yeah, and Alexandra, I have to say, thank you so much for doing this work, because telling this story in the way that you did really truly gives an accurate picture of what our lives are like in so many different spaces. I personally could relate a lot to the character Rebecca in your book,
I was thinking about you, East Coast fourth grade teacher.
But I will say that
with no work-life balance.
Yes, exactly.
You gotta finish
correct,
that off, Jocelyn.
But I have to say, I cannot thank you enough. We can't thank you enough for telling this story in such a compelling and meaningful way, because I think that it opens people's minds to what it really is like to be in this space, to be a teacher, to have that tug of war of this job is way harder than what I expected, how I should be treated, but how can I leave because I'm here for these students, I'm here for them, and they need us. And so, you know, the first thing is just thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad you feel that way. Thank you for saying so.
Well, I want to open this up to you because I think a really important piece is, what did you learn? What were sort of the important things and takeaways so that people who may or not be educators kind of see this from a different lens?
Yeah, I think that the bottom line is that teaching itself is incredibly inspiring and powerful and rewarding. As a teacher in Texas told me, it makes my soul happy. That's what he said. And I found that to be really a good way of putting it, both when I looked at other teachers' stories and also with my own experience as a sub. It makes your soul happy. It's a beautiful job. It's the most important profession in the world. All children need teachers to grow up educated, informed, and ready for life and employment. However, districts and politicians and some parents are tainting this beautiful, crucial work with low pay, unimaginable workloads, not enough support staff or resources, and just general disrespect and demoralization. So that's like the nutshell.
Yeah, I really was struck by your simple three steps to fixing the problem. One was provide support. Two was, how about we pay these people? And three, let's build autonomy, because those are kind of three prongs that we've started to really look at, like our legislative asks, our negotiations. How do we articulate our needs? Really is support, you got to pay the people. And please, for goodness sakes, if you're going to do stuff, how about you ask a teacher? You know, the novel idea.
Yeah, I would distill it down to those three. Plus, I would also add, and maybe this would kind of fall into autonomy, a teaching job that can be completed during paid contracted hours at school rather than unpaid hours at home, which maybe is the hardest ask because it involves so many intangibles. And as you know, being a teacher, no matter what worker you do or don't have, you're still not going to leave it at the door because your thoughts are with your students 24 hours a day. However, planning time, there's got to be something we right. can do about increasing planning time during the day.
Absolutely. We actually put into legislative requests and is in a bill this year, 30 minutes, whole 30 minutes of guaranteed planning time. But we figured if we could at least get 30 minutes on the books, because you're absolutely right, the process of teaching, it is a skill. It is an art form. And as you know, as a sub, it doesn't just magically happen in the minutes that you're in that classroom with kids. It is stuff that you think about all the time. My husband used to make fun of me because we'd go away for a weekend and I'd be like, ooh, I need to stop here and get this because I can use it in my class with my statistics kids, or I can do this with my geometry students. I made him stop on the side of a highway to pick up a survey that like random people were doing on an entryway. Talk about, you know, that moment when you're like, your sanity has been challenged.
That's interesting. That's an interesting project. See, I thought I was good for going to every Target and CVS in the area in the couple days following Easter to see how much 75% off Easter candy I could get to bribe students, but yours is better.
Well, my favorite trick of the trade, and teachers in Connecticut will know what I'm talking about, is there used to be, right before school opened, Rite Aid Pharmacy would do a 1 cent sale on pencils. And the minute that sale got posted, I was there. I bought every pencil Rite Aid had. I'd make my children come in. I was like, let's load them up, people, because that's what we do.
Well, and I think that when you're looking at the outside contractual work hours and what goes into prep time, it's beyond grading. It's beyond, you know, looking at students right. And putting them in groups. It goes so far beyond that because it stretches from everything from making manipulatives and organizing to researching what types of lessons work best to calling parents and making sure that you have communicated properly.
Let's talk about parents for a minute because I think one of the pieces in your book that I think it brings to life is how that parent-teacher relationship has changed. For many of us, we kind of grew up in a time where you didn't challenge the teacher because your personal parent would make that a problem for you. And that is not necessarily the situation that teachers are facing today.
No, it's very different now. I'll give you an example. There's this teacher blaming narrative among parents now. You know, part of it is a sense of entitlement. Part of it is just they want someone to blame because they don't want to hold themselves accountable. It's a funny story. One day after school, a high school English teacher in Pennsylvania was going to her car in the school parking lot when a Mercedes rolled right into her. Luckily, she was uninjured. But she jumped back in surprise, and the parent driver, who was still on her cell phone, lowered her window down and yelled, "Stop touching my car!" And like, for me, that's the perfect illustration of this culture of teacher blaming in which parents are making these ridiculous demands and then blaming teachers for not meeting them. It's like they drive their car into a teacher, and then they blame the teacher for touching it. And that's kind of the attitude that we're looking at. They just want to scapegoat teachers for problems with themselves, problems with their students, problems with the districts, problems with their lives. And it's really gotten out of hand. I think social media has played a large part in that.
Oh, definitely.
The politics, which is probably another whole different podcast.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, this need for immediate answers or change, right? I think some of our parents that we work with, you know, come to you with a problem and they want you to fix it. And not only do they want you to fix it, but they want you to fix it yesterday. And, you know, the fact that it takes work to build and grow students and communities of learners, like that has been totally forgotten, not only by our parents, but also some other stakeholders that we might have to deal with on a regular basis.
I think part of that sense of immediate gratification, I think you're totally right about that, is that grades are now in many districts posted online in real time. The teacher grades it gets into the system and parents can see it. And so there is more of a sense of instantaneous response. You know, Penny, one of the teachers I followed for the book for a year, she would get emails the second she posted a grade from parents saying, "What happened with this grade? How can we," notice we, "get this grade back up?" And I think that has contributed to the idea among parents that they can expect an instant response, which also gets back to planning time, because if you're a high school teacher with 180 students, you can't possibly get back to all the parents who email you within 30 minutes of planning time.
You couldn't be more correct. Like we struggle with the fact that there's this push and pull between parent communication and also developing students' self-advocacy skills. Like I look at it as, you know, there's one of the groups of children I teach is high school seniors who are in a college level statistics class. It doesn't make a lot of sense to really invite the parents 100% into that to micromanage their child, because we're trying to develop their sense of self-advocacy, their ability to be successful with college level experiences. And yet at the same time, if a student's not doing well or they're not handing in their assignments, the first question an administrator will ask is, well, have you talked to their parents? Have you called home? What have you done to help this situation? And you kind of sit there and go, well, at some point, when do we invite the child to be responsible for their self, right? Like at some point that has to be the switch here that we flip.
And also with teachers having so many students, when does the administrator step in and say, okay, yeah, let me be an administrator and take administrative responsibility and call the parent, because that's what administrators should be doing.
Well, did you find that that was a common occurrence? Because I'd like to know what school district that was in.
I heard from so many teachers that administrators have been more and more frequently passing the buck to teachers and putting the responsibility on teachers to be in charge of calling parents, not only for academic things that are specific to their class, but also for general disciplinary issues. For example, if you catch a couple making, and this is a true story, a couple making out in the stairwell during transition time, the administrators won't do anything unless you first document the report, you first as the teacher
right.
contact the parents, you do all the legwork, and then only then will the administrators step in. It's like the administrators have abandoned that part of their job, and it's just another example of all the extra responsibilities they're putting on teachers' shoulders.
Yeah, very true. And oftentimes we find that that level of sort of, well, you know the kids best is sort of the catch-all, right? Like, well, you know the kids best. And there's a certain point at which that may be true, but I need help. You know, the concept of it takes a village actually needs to be real. It can't just be lip service. And good administrative support, because I think you told a story about a person who was suggested because they had disruptive students that they needed to go to professional development on how to manage chaos. And I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, that I remember that story. That was a Washington, D.C. teacher, and there was a kid who was attacking another child with scissors and threatening to kill him. The teacher went to the administrator, and the principal said, wow, this incident really stuck in your craw, huh? And the only consequence was she told the teacher to go to PD to, and you have it right, the quote was, to increase your tolerance for chaos. So the teacher left the school. But I don't think it matters whether an administrator or a teacher knows a student better. If someone's vaping in the bathroom, you don't need to know the kid to invite
right.
consequences.
Well, with great power comes great responsibility, right? And an administrator has an exceptional amount of responsibility to guide and you know, support that school. And the authority of an administrator falls differently with a parent than the authority of a teacher. And so, you know, sometimes it's not about who knows who best, it's what's the protocol and where does the buck stop? And when you look at some of our school systems, you know, the buck is supposed to stop at higher leadership, but they let the responsibility and the blame fall on the teachers, who are really just trying to do anything they can
right.
to support their students and make sure that they have successes and feel loved and supported. So, you know, it is that level of it's you know, these administrative positions come with more money and more flexibility and more autonomy, but they're not necessarily always following through with what that.
The more responsibility portion of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A little bit. So talk a little bit to us about what teachers told you in terms of like, we have to do this. Like, what is it that they really reached and kind of connected with you? Or even in your own teaching experience, you found like, my gosh, we have to fix this now.
Oh my gosh, there are so many. Where do I start?
Pick your favorite.
I think of all the things teachers bring up, probably more support staff is one of the most frequent ones. More counselors, more aides, more paraeducators, a full-time nurse in every school, because teachers are having to take on so much of those responsibilities. Schools are cutting counselors and social workers.
Right.
And then students are coming to the teachers who aren't necessarily trained, but of course want to help their students in any way possible, which, you know, takes emotional investment, takes time. Paraeducators, and I talk to so many special ed teachers who are drowning because there aren't enough aides in their classroom, and they're expected to monitor all of these children who need extra help. And that's how you get extra violence in the classroom, not because
right.
students are malicious, but because students maybe have impulse control issues or they have communication issues, and so they lash out. And if you're a teacher with no paraeducator, this happened to Miguel, one of the teachers I followed, he's a special education teacher. out west, you know, he can turn his back on one student to attend to another, and there are no A's in his classroom, and the student behind him body slams him. I mean, he sustained permanent back and arm injuries because of incidents like that. And it's not the student's fault. It's the fault of the district for not putting enough supervisory adults in the classroom. So I think if I were to pick one, I can't pick one. It's too hard. But I think that's probably the most frequent thing I heard, that they need more support staff.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is an expensive problem to solve. We're trying to tackle that. We actually started the school year here in Connecticut with 1,200 teacher and educator vacancies, and that number has increased as of March of this year. It has not gone down.
What has it increased to? Do you know offhand?
It's almost 1,300.
Oh, wow.
So over the course of the year, we were hoping, obviously, to see a decline. And what we've seen is an increase that, interestingly enough, has spread into every community. So initially, the starkest narrative was in the areas that are most challenging, right? Our more urban communities and our what we call our alliance district. They're typically financially distressed communities. But the new numbers show us that the creep has extended beyond that. And really that you're looking at every city and town saying, we don't have enough people. And that's a money issue. You know, when you talk about paraeducators, these are often really low paying jobs where I can work at Target and nobody's going to hit me or threaten me or, you know, do anything to me. And I'm going to make more money than I will if I'm in a classroom where I might be put into some, you know, compromising situations. So these are expensive problems.
Yeah, a lot of our paraeducators do not get health insurance. And I think one thing that you may have spoken about is that we don't necessarily have a teacher shortage. That's not the right word for us to use. We have a shortage of support. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there are plenty of potential qualified and aspiring educators. There are plenty of amazing teachers and teachers-to-be out there. There's not a shortage of teachers. There's a shortage of jobs that adequately compensate, treat, and respect skilled professionals such that they would want to be educators in the first place. That's not a shortage of teachers. That's the wrong way to put it. That just goes along in the narrative of trying to blame everything on teachers.
And I agree with you. And I appreciate you challenging sort of the status quo of shortage, 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 because you're absolutely right. We have people leaving classrooms, qualified individuals who are capable, interested, want to do the work. I mean, we had a story of a special ed teacher who walked out in the middle of the day and just threw their hands up and said, you want more than I can give. You've designed a job that I cannot be successful at, no matter if I work 24 hours a day or not. And this is not healthy. This is not wise. I can't do this anymore. And literally walked out in the middle of the day.
People are fed up. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, and they have other options. You know, in states like ours, we have teachers who can go get other jobs. They are being pulled into other arenas where people are like, oh, teachers are smart. They're capable. They're committed. They're empathetic. We could use that here. And they come on in and they send us emails. We're the leaders of the state union for teachers, right? Like, we are the chief advocates. And people are like, hey, have you thought about leaving your profession?
Right. And I think that something that we have to think about is that we have such an exceptional amount of transferable skills that could go pretty much anywhere. And it's something that we have to think about in terms of establishing learning communities in public schools where teachers feel supported and get paid and do, you know, the things that allow for us to do our jobs where we were trained in, by the way, most of us with master's degrees.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, I always say this, you've heard me say it like probably a million times, that our teaching conditions are our students' learning conditions. And so that this isn't just our professional problem, right? This is a community problem that we have to address from so many places. And I think before we move on to kind of how we fix this problem, I'd like to just, Alexandra, if you could speak to some of the joys that you found in the classroom so that we can leave this section on a happy note, because there is really no profession that is more rewarding in some aspects than being a teacher.
Yeah, I know. We just talked about teachers leaving. Teachers don't want to leave. Teachers stick it out as long as they can because the actual work of teaching is it's like life-giving. Like, teachers get exhilarated when they see the aha moments that students have with varying abilities and disabilities, when they grasp a new concept, or they make a connection between two different subjects, or they finally figure out how to do that math problem. And that's not just rewarding for the student. Like, for a teacher, even one moment like that can keep you going for days. That there's such joy in that. There's joy in seeing or hearing from former students, whether it's, you know, an email just thanking your teacher and saying, hey, I just want to say, like, I realize now that what you taught me in fourth period or whatever has really made a difference. Like, even the smallest thing like that, or when students go back to visit their teachers, people mention teaching a great lesson that students are excited about, and then the bell rings and the students go, aw, because they don't want your class to end. Like, there are so many times during the day. I think the actual school day is not the problem. I think teachers love teaching. That is just, I don't know how to describe it. It's an endeavor that is just so motivating and inspiring and has so many rewarding moments that keep you going. It's the job of being a teacher that teachers don't like right now. And you can absolutely love teaching, but not love being a teacher. And so teachers are trying to stick it out as long as possible, hoping that the job will improve, the working conditions will improve, because teaching itself is something like you could do for the rest of your life and continue to get joy.
That is so true. I was at TJ Maxx this weekend, and I had a student who I literally had 10 years ago come on up and be like, Mrs. Diaz, how are you? And so she and I talked for a little bit. This is a grown woman who is now an engineer and works on developing prosthetics, and shared with me how, you know, all her joy in her work and how math made a difference. So you're 100% right that the work that we do does feed our souls. It makes us feel complete and feel like the purposeful and like the work that we do that matters. And you are 100% right that it's when we turn to the external, all the forces outside of our classrooms that kind of press in on us, that starts to be suffocating.
Right. And I think if you read this book, The Teachers, it really does. I mean, I can't express enough how it sums up just the struggles and the moments of joy of really why we do this work. And so, again, I can't thank you enough for putting that into perspective of really what this journey has looked like for so many of us. And, you know, I think really what it comes down to is it's time to fix it. So again, thank you for putting this forward for us so that we can really tell that story and so that everybody can relate to it, not just the people who are in those rooms every day.
And the next segment, that's exactly what we're going to talk about, is what do we do now? We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at CEA.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.